The funeral of 18-year-old Michael Brown, who was shot dead by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, is set for Monday. Brown's death has focused international attention on a single suburb of St. Louis. As part of his Micropolis series, WNYC's Arun Venugopal considers race and the idea of the American suburb.
For years, we had such a clear sense of what the suburbs meant.
Bobby!
As depicted in shows like Mad Men, they were clean, safe, filled with happy kids, stolid men. They had perfect lawns, and of course, they were overwhelmingly white, except for the help. Andy Weiss is a sociologist and grew up in Cleveland.
My experience as a white man, as a white teenager and adolescent, a white child growing up, was an America that was, you know, represented by the community that I lived in, which was exclusively white, was militantly white.
You don't expect to have racial violence in the suburbs because for a long time, you only had one race. In the 1950s and 60s, this monoculture was maintained through a variety of ways, some of these explicitly racial, others more subtle. Weiss is the author of Places of Their Own, African-American Suburbanization in the 20th Century, and he says that over time, class became a proxy for race.
They began to zone out apartments of any kind from communities.
And if you wanted to build a house, it couldn't be small, meaning affordable. And the lot it was built on couldn't be small either.
Not just the quarter acre that was common at Levittown, but half acre lot subdivisions.
In essence, they made sure only the affluent moved in.
But in an America where only a handful of African Americans were members of the upper middle class, those were de facto racial restrictions, and often they were meant as such.
Andy said places where African Americans had been living often found themselves with all the stuff nobody else wanted. The sewage treatment plant, the new highway. Patrick Sharkey's the author of Stuck in Place, Urban Neighborhoods and the End of Progress Toward Racial Equality.
When we look at race in America, we often miss the most dramatic racial disparities, which lie in where people live, the types of environments in which different groups of Americans live.
Eventually, African Americans did move out of the cities in large numbers. Half of all Hispanics and Blacks today live in suburbs like Ferguson. But when the African Americans moved in, the whites moved out. Ferguson is now two-thirds Black, but the mayor and 5 out of 6 of its council members are white, as are almost all of its police officers. The median household income in Ferguson is around $37,000, about $10,000 less than the state average. And the poverty rate is a lot higher. But the problems in places like Ferguson don't just affect poor Blacks, but wealthy ones too. John Logan is a sociologist at Brown University. Using 2010 census data, Logan looked at suburban households across America, specifically Black ones earning over $75,000 and poor white ones earning under $40,000.
The affluent Black household actually lives in a poorer neighborhood than the poor white household. And this is because of the high degree of segregation by race and the fact that affluent Black households are actually shunted toward, steered toward, end up in less advantaged communities.
The suburbs where affluent Blacks do live have schools with more poor children and lower test scores. They have housing stock with higher vacancy rates, and they have poorer neighbors and higher crime rates.
So even when they've made it in terms of income, you manage to move to suburbia, but actually you're not doing as well as relatively poor white households.
America's neighborhoods are more diverse than they used to be, but the rate at which they've integrated is far, far slower than what Logan expected when he became a researcher in the 1960s. And it's not just places like St. Louis. In fact, among cities with large Black populations, St. Louis has the 9th worst level of segregation. Number one on that list is a tie between Detroit and Milwaukee. And right behind them is the city of New York, which is only marginally less segregated than it was in 1980.
Every decade, I have reason to think that now things are changing. Opportunities are opening up. Black middle class is expanding. Whites are changing their attitudes. In all the survey research, it shows that they're less resistant to having a Black neighbor. And by golly, we elected a Black president. So by 2010, you might have thought that we'd see better outcomes than this, but actually, the color line turns out to be extremely persistent.
The color line is reflected in attitudes as well. A new survey conducted by the Pew Research Center notes that 80% of African Americans think Michael Brown's death raises important issues about race. While nearly half of the white respondents think Ferguson's actually getting too much attention. So you can't help but wonder, can we as a nation ever reach a political consensus about policing and civil rights? Logan says about half of the black and Hispanic people in America now live in low-income areas like Ferguson, which have relatively few whites. To these people, America looks a lot different than it does to the average white person, whose neighborhood is 75% white and is functioning pretty well. More reason to be skeptical. But another scholar I talked to, and someone who's pretty well versed in this issue, is Clement Price.
Professor of History at Rutgers University, Newark.
Price is African American, an expert on race relations, and grew up at the tail end of segregation in Washington, D.C. He knows the numbers. He says his generation was far more optimistic than the students he now teaches, in part because of the optimism that came with the civil rights movement and a good economy that created jobs. He also thinks some of the basic lessons of the 60s have been lost, like the notion of community policing, making sure that law enforcement and citizens are communicating with each other, that they actually know each other. He sees plenty to worry about. And yet,
the fact that there's such media attention,
meaning the explosion of interest surrounding Ferguson,
is something that we Americans might want to see as a sign that we're not hopelessly incapable of looking at tragedy and trying to figure out a way to not just cope with it, but solve it and put ourselves as a society, as a nation, as a collective on a much higher plane.
And Price says it means that one of the nation's original sins is being challenged by conversation, discourse, and, he hopes, deeper understanding. This is Micropolis. I'm Arun Venugopal at WNYC.